Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's CARON.org.
Dozens of oil trains travel across Pennsylvania every week, each carrying up to 3 million gallons of volatile crude from North Dakota. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. A train carrying Bakken crude derailed in Quebec 2 years ago, causing a fire and explosion that claimed 47 lives and leveled the downtown. And in response, Governor Tom Wolf's administration has issued recommendations intended to reduce the risk of a catastrophic derailment. Let's take a closer look with John Hurdle from State Impact Pennsylvania. John, thanks for joining us again on NewsWorks Tonight.
Hi, Dave.
Now, I understand there were some 27 recommendations. What were the main ones?
There were a series of technical recommendations that the author of the report put forward for ways in which the railroads could actually reduce the risk of a derailment. And one of the recommendations, not particularly technical, was simply a speed reduction to 35 miles an hour. Well, that would be the maximum limit in a densely populated area like Philadelphia.
And I understand there was also recommendations regarding positive train control that we've heard about with reference to passenger trains as well.
Yes, there was. The author of the report, Dr. Zaremski of the University of Delaware, did encourage the railroads, specifically Norfolk Southern and CSX, that carry the oil trains through Philadelphia, to install positive train control as soon as possible. There was a conference call this afternoon during which John Hanger, who's Governor Wolf's Secretary of Policy and Planning, did address that, and he said that even though Pennsylvania is not in a position to implement that particular recommendation, it will continue to encourage the railroads to consider that technology in order to make the trains safer.
And to what extent are CSX and Norfolk Southern considering these recommendations?
Well, I think that the railroads in general are already working on a series of safety improvements, Dr. Zaremski did acknowledge that, but he's urging them to go the extra mile in making these safety improvements. There were a series of measures that were introduced by the U.S. Transportation Department back in May, and the railroads are working on those. And those particular railroads, Norfolk Southern and CSX, say that of course, that safety is their highest priority.
Now, again, these are recommendations. To what extent can they be mandated?
Secretary Hanger did say that the section of recommendations put forward that were laid directly at on the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, he said that all of those would be implemented. And they include asking track inspectors to focus their attention on what are called turnouts on crude by rail routes in the state, and also recommending that state inspectors include yards and sidings amongst their responsibilities.
In addition to the Quebec catastrophe, how prolific is the problem or risk of catastrophe specifically in Pennsylvania?
Of course, it depends. It depends who you ask. The opponents of the oil trains have been arguing for a long time that these massive trains rumbling through the center of Philadelphia are just a catastrophe waiting to happen. Of course, the railroads deny that, and they are already taking steps to build up public confidence.
But are they taking steps at their pace, or again, is there any impetus for them to act in a perhaps more timely fashion?
Well, I think that the pace that they're working at is that dictated by the federal government, specifically through the Federal Railroad Administration, because as the city of Philadelphia is finding out, it has very little control over this industry that is federally regulated.
John, what response have we gotten to date specifically from CSX and Norfolk Southern?
Both the railroads stress that they place a very high emphasis on safety, of course. CSX says that it's invested very heavily in the track quality and other technology along the routes where it hauls oil trains over the last 2 years, but they did not respond to my questions about specific recommendations in this report.
John, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you.
That's John Hurdle from State Impact Pennsylvania. Congressman Chaka Fattah is headed to court tomorrow for his first appearance on racketeering, conspiracy, and bribery charges. Members of Philadelphia Democrats' legal team are trying to cast doubt on the 29-count indictment, but legal observers say it might ultimately hurt Fattah's case, as WHYY's Bobby Allen reports.
Friends of Fattah reached out to WHYY and set up an interview with an expert accountant, Harris DeVore, who's being paid by Fattah. This is what DeVore contends. The feds say Fattah used campaign money to pay a car insurance bill that included a personal vehicle. But he says the feds didn't mention that a campaign car was on the same policy.
It's sort of misleading to me to say this because it leaves out half the story. Of course they made these payments, but there's a campaign car that they're supposed to make payments on.
It's a tiny point and does little to undercut the 85-page indictment that alleges bribery and hiding $1 million loan to support Fattah's failed run for mayor in 2007. But defense attorney Bob Goldman, who's not involved in the case, says this could just be the first volley from Fattah's team.
You know, all of a sudden they're starting to build a groundswell of people questioning whether or not the prosecution's well-founded. It might be a defense strategy. I mean, frankly, if I thought it was good evidence, I would be holding it and not broadcasting it through the media.
Rich Shepp is another defense attorney and former prosecutor not involved in the case. He says the legal team is trying to combat all the stories written since the indictment.
So if they can plant this in the middle of it to start getting what they may believe is more balanced press or, you know, a shot at the government, I sort of understand that.
But Shepp isn't sure if it will matter.
I think it's very short-lived. I don't think it has any impact on the case whatsoever.
The larger issue is whether Fattah and his wife faked the sale of a Porsche to conceal a bribe from a lobbyist. According to the indictment, fake documents were made to show the car was sold for $18,000. Then the Fattahs used the money to close on a house in the Poconos. Fattah's legal team isn't yet ready to produce any documents undercutting that allegation. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
The White House unveiled an initiative today aimed at reducing fatal heroin overdoses. As WHYY's Alana Gordon reports, the crux of the effort involves pairing public health experts with law enforcement to better track the problem.
The rate of heroin-related deaths has been going up. They've nearly quadrupled in the last decade. But Michael Botticelli, director of the National Drug Policy Control, says it's hard to keep up with what's happening in real time. Information gathering is fragmented from place to place. As one example?
As a matter of fact, we've gone from having a 3-year delay in overdose data to a 1-year delay.
Significant information gaps exist for tracking other drug activity, whether that be sources of tainted heroin or drug arrests across state lines. The new initiative puts $2.5 million into 5 high-intensity drug trafficking areas that cut through the tri-state region. The money will help hire point people and health analysts to better collect and share heroin information. Again, Botticelli.
I think this collaborative really lets us share information on kind of where we see significantly impacted communities, how we think we need to increase both law enforcement efforts to diminish the supply, but also our public health efforts to deal with overdose prevention and getting people into treatment.
Area drug control leaders say all of this will allow them to react a lot faster to developments across jurisdictions and create a better public health and safety infrastructure. I'm Alana Gordon, WHYY News.
It's now 40 days until Pope Francis arrives in Philadelphia for the World Meeting of Families, and that's why the Diocese of Camden and the nonprofit Catholic Charities are launching a program called 40 Days of Francis. As WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, the program is intended to shed light on poverty in southern New Jersey.
Pope Francis is a staunch advocate for the poor and often visits with poor people on his trips around the world. For that reason, Bishop Dennis Sullivan of the Camden Diocese thought it was a good time to increase awareness of the poverty extending throughout South Jersey.
It's not just focused here in the city of Camden and nearby cities. It's very extensive throughout Cape May County, Atlantic County, Cumberland County, and Cumberland County is the highest has the highest rate of poverty in the state of New Jersey.
Leading the 40 Days of Francis effort is the nonprofit group Catholic Charities, which will hold open houses at its offices across South Jersey, hand out cards with statistics about poverty, and host a food relay with local Catholic high school students. It also sponsored an essay contest for parishioners who couldn't afford tickets to the world meeting. Christina Silvaria and her fiancé were one of 8 families to win tickets. As a nurse, she wants to learn how better to help people taking care of family members and struggling to afford health care.
These folks are just exhausted, and they are doing their best, you know, with very limited resources, with very little response from the communities in which they live. So this is an exciting time to be Christian, exciting time to be Catholic, because, you know, the Pope himself will bless us with that visit, and you know, this just really launches it for all of us. So I'm very much part of the energy now.
Pope Francis arrives in Philadelphia September 26th. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, organizations that administer safety net services in Pennsylvania are asking Governor Tom Wolf and lawmakers to interrupt their 6-week-long budget stalemate and approve stopgap aid to the struggling nonprofit providers. Jersey City's mayor says the state's biggest utility shows utter disregard for urban areas when it rips up freshly paved roads to perform underground work and leaves them in shoddy condition. The Jersey Journal reports that Mayor Steve Fulop says the city is halting all non-essential PSE&G work until the utility agrees to adhere to a new city law demanding coordination with paving schedule. 92 degrees, overcast on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. This evening's forecast, partly cloudy skies, low 73 degrees. Still ahead, stargazers can catch a glimpse of International Space Station tonight as it passes the bright star Polaris.
So if you synchronize your watches, at 8:56, you'll see it go past this bright star that marks the end of the handle of the Little Dipper.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Cooper Heart Institute supports WHYY. Their multidisciplinary team of cardiologists introduces the new Watchman device, a minimally invasive treatment option designed to reduce the need for long-term blood thinners in patients with non-valvular atrial fibrillation, thereby reducing the risk of AFib-related stroke. The Cooper Heart Institute is a comprehensive heart care center with offices throughout South Jersey. Details at cooperhealth.org/watchman.
Hey, I'm Candy Palmiter. In the 1980s, Yonkers, New York was one of many cities torn apart by the fight over public housing. Director Paul Haggis captures that time in his new HBO series, Show Me a Hero, and he joins us to chat about it coming up on Cue from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
You want the best of both political worlds? Try running for president while being an active member of Congress.
So as long as they have excellent staffs, both in their district and in Washington, the overwhelming majority of their work can still get done, even if they're on the presidential campaign trail.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Yeah, that's a pretty good setup. We'll tell you more about it next time on Marketplace from APM.
Tonight at 6:30 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. It's time to entice listeners to grab a pair of binoculars and take a dog day challenge with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Now, Derek, we're more specifically talking about the pre-dawn portion of that dog day.
Yes, indeed we are, because the pre-dawn portion of that dog day allows us to catch sight of one of the marvelous planets of our solar system. It's the planet Mars.
Though you can typically see Mars without the aid of binoculars, what's so special about bringing that into the mix?
Well, in this case, Mars happens to be pretty close to the horizon for this period of observing, and we're recommending between 5:15 and 5:30 for Mars itself, with an overall viewing window in the pre-dawn sky of the half hour from 5 a.m. until 5:30. It would be very helpful to use a pair of binoculars to pick it out of the pre-dawn sky so far down and close to the horizon.
And while we brought binoculars to the party, what else can be seen?
The other thing that's really cool about observing this time of year, we can see the winter stars in the pre-dawn sky in the summer, so we can easily pick out Orion without any difficulty at all. However, the real object to look for is the Milky Way. The Milky Way stretches right across the sky from south across to the north, and if you're working under clear, dark skies with a pair of binoculars, you can sweep your view through the Milky Way and see all sorts of really wonderful clumps and clusters and collections of stars.
And for those who prefer evening activities, let's get them outside tonight.
Well, if we step outside tonight, we have a wonderful opportunity to see International Space Station as it flies overhead. It starts in the northwestern portion of the sky, heading over toward the east, and it makes its appearance at about 8:51. It's only going to be visible for 7 minutes. And the interesting thing about this pass is there are really two things about it. Number one, Space Station will pass right past the bright star Polaris at 8:56 p.m. So if you synchronize your watches at 8:56, you'll see it go past this bright star that marks the end of the handle of the Little Dipper.
Timing's also important when it comes to observing planets beyond our solar system, and astronomers were fortunate recently to find one amid a crowded field.
Yes, indeed they were. Now, this planet, known as Kepler-453b, might not seem unique, except for the fact that it orbits two stars. And in this case, it's one of that class of planets that would have double sunsets, much like the Star Wars dream planet of Tatooine. Previously, astronomers thought that a situation like that simply couldn't come up, that the tidal forces, the dynamic forces involved in two stars orbiting each other would not allow for a planet to orbit them as well. The dynamics might either tear the planet apart or throw it out of the system altogether. Well, now we've been able to identify 10 such systems where the planet would see two stars in the sky like a double sun. As it turns out, this planet is orbiting at a distance from its parent star that would allow it to have liquid water on its surface. In other words, it's in the Goldilocks zone for that stellar system, the place where water could exist as a liquid on the planet.
So what was the particular challenge of finding this planet?
For Kepler-453b, the alignment of the planet's orbit to the star and the spacecraft observing is such that only 8% of the time in which we might take observations can we actually see the planet crossing the face of the star.
And with that, is the scientific consensus now that most stars have planets?
Well, just from the work done by Kepler alone, we're now seeing that almost every star that Kepler looks at has a planetary system. That's a huge advance in astronomy in the last 20 to 30 years to begin with. Now, to find planets orbiting pairs of stars, that's even more unusual. And this discovery of the timing aspect now adds a whole other class of possibility for planets to exist orbiting stars.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, Chief Astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, time up without a space wave incorporated.
Chris Cetullo always swore there was one topic he would avoid in his Center Square commentary. Well, today, he breaks that vow.
Before I get to where I'm going with this one, let me clarify something. I'm not really either pro-choice or pro-life. I've never shaken a sense that abortion is always a tragedy and sometimes a sin. But I'm also sure government has no business dictating to women or couples what should be done about a pregnancy. Under standard political rhetoric, my position would be termed incoherent. I don't agree. Some deeds that a broad group deems morally wrong still aren't fit for government regulation. Adultery, for example. Looking at the abortion debate, I see others whose positions strike me as truly confused. That would include politicians who carry on about the rights of the unborn, then seem to lose interest in the welfare of children after they are actually born. Here's an axiom of sound legislating. Sometimes the best way to achieve your goal is not to ban a behavior you dislike, but to encourage the behavior you favor. In this case, that behavior is cherishing and nurturing children. So here's my modest proposal to reduce abortions in America while helping those children grow into healthy, productive citizens. Some aspects of it may prove impractical, but consider it a thought exercise. When a woman seeks an abortion, instead of mandating she be told medical lies, lay out for her this alternative. If you agree to have the child, you will get a $100,000 payment from a grateful nation. Whether you keep the child or give it up for adoption, for the first 4 years of the child's life, her caretakers will receive a payment equal to the average household income in the home state. The child will be guaranteed a slot in a high-quality pre-K program. Next, K through 12, the child will get a no-strings voucher equal to the average per-pupil spending in the home state's public schools. Then, free tuition at a home state public university. Sound expensive? Maybe. But every unborn life is infinitely precious, right? And no price should be too high to uphold a bright line moral value, correct? Estimating this program's outlay in a back-of-the-napkin way, I came up with $226 billion a year over the first 10 years, with the tab growing over time. I'd love to do this for all kids, but this is one way to begin. For context, the annual defense budget is just shy of $500 billion a year. National spending on prisons is about $90 billion. I think this program would yield far higher economic, societal, and tax dividends than those other two. I'm ready to pay my share of higher taxes to make it happen. What do you think? I'm Chris Cetullo.
Chris Cetullo is WHYY's Vice President for News and Civic Dialogue. And since his commentary was released this morning, we've gotten a few comments. Here's one from Naomi Call. I was flabbergasted when I heard this ridiculous piece. Given the current state of the political rights attack on women, making some sort of jokey what-if point about tax breaks versus reproductive rights is truly stupid. Stick to what you know, Chris Cetullo. Well, turns out Naomi isn't the only one with strong feelings on the issue. Let us know what you think. Weigh in on the website newsworks.org or find us on Twitter or Facebook to leave your comment. Finally, Stevie Wonder played a surprise set of songs at a free pop-up concert this afternoon in Philadelphia's Dilworth Park. Wayne Wormley was among the many fans who gladly endured 90 degrees of heat to hear the Motown legend.
Stevie's music has always been a moral compass for a lot of people. He speaks truth to power, his music is known worldwide.
The 65-year-old Wonder used the surprise set to announce an additional 20 dates for his Songs in the Key of Life tour, including another gig in Philly in October. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Intervention Associates, a subsidiary of Friends Life Care Partners, supports WHYY. A nonprofit, Quaker-based organization, Intervention Associates provides care management and guardianship services for people of all ages. Services include home care, community services, crisis intervention, and patient advocacy. Intervention Associates navigates all available healthcare options and medical benefits. Clients receive a professional needs assessment and detailed care plan. Information at interventionassociates.org.